I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. The new Pope, Benedict XVI, has held his first public mass. But still, around the world, people are trying to figure out what kind of Pope Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger will be.
Viene spesso etichettato come fondamentalismo, mentre il relativismo, cioè il lasciarsi portare qua e là.
He made it very clear in a homily delivered earlier this week that he considers himself a firm protector of the faith. We are moving towards a dictatorship of relativism, he warned, which is akin to, quote, letting oneself be tossed and swept along by every wind of teaching. He said also that Catholicism is an adult faith, which does not follow the weaves of today's fashions or latest novelties. So this hour we're asking what you think of the appointment of Cardinal Ratzinger as Pope. What will his election mean for Catholics here in America? And when it comes to leading the faithful, what's more important, to be flexible and embrace contemporary social trends, or to remain strident and faithful to the core teachings of the Church? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And with me today, two members of the Catholic clergy. Sister Maureen Sullivan joins me in the studio. She was here earlier this week when we were wondering who the Pope would be. Sister Maureen is a Dominican Sister of Hope and a professor of theology at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire. Nice to have you back with us.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
And Father Michael Barrett is director of the Holy Cross Chapel in Houston, Texas, and a priest with Opus Dei. That's a conservative international institution of the Catholic Church based in New York. Father Barrett, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
I'm going to start with you because I understand that you have met Cardinal Ratzinger. What's he like?
He's a very gentle, gracious man, very approachable. His striking quality is the way he is so humble in his dealing with people around him. He's also a man who evidently prays. The times that I've met him on occasions in around St. Peter's, he is almost always holding a rosary bead in his hands and praying as he walks to work from his apartment on one side of St. Peter's Square to the other side where his office is located.
Were you pleased that he was the one chosen?
I was. I thought that the fact that the cardinals in such a quick manner chose him shows a great unity in the Church, and that evidently they could see the credentials that he has as a saintly man who is also very learned were just the things that we needed to continue the legacy of Pope John Paul II.
Now, Sister Maureen, we talked on Monday, and while at that time people were looking at the likelihood or the possibility of Cardinal Ratzinger becoming Pope, this still came as something of a surprise to you, I understand.
Yes, I was very surprised for a number of reasons. I'm not going to believe the bookies anymore, and I'm not going to believe some of the stories that they tell anymore, because they told us the front runner never, you know, gets it. You go in a pope, you come out a cardinal. Well, all of that went down, you know. They made liars out of all of these statements. So, excuse me. Part of it was that I was surprised that those expectations were simply dashed so quickly. I agree with Father Barrett with the idea that the quickness of the vote clearly does indicate, I think, for the billion Catholics all over the world, and for those who are watching the Catholic Church, that there is a sense of unity behind the cardinal's choice. The other thing that surprised me, though, was on a theological basis. I have been hearing for years, I teach a course on the Church, and I read up on it, and I have been hearing for years that bishops all over the world were hoping that whenever the next conclave would come, that the person who would be chosen would be someone who would have a bit of a more collegial leaning. And by that I mean the Second Vatican Council really espoused this collegiality teaching, that the Pope and his brother bishops share in the governance of the Church, not the CEO model of a pre-Vatican II where everything goes through Rome.
Right.
And so I have heard the call for more collegiality. Now, we don't want to judge Pope Benedict XVI in light of the stories that are being told about Cardinal Ratzinger in terms of being rigid, strict, etc. But the point is, he does not seem to have an affection for collegiality based on what we know. So I think that was part of my surprise.
Father Barrett, help me with taking that another step further, because I hear two things from people in the know. I hear that this man is kind of like a seamless continuation from Pope John Paul II in terms of what the leadership of the church will be. But I also hear people talking about him as a stricter theologian, someone who is more determined to cleave to the dogma of the church. How do you reconcile those two different perspectives?
Well, first, I think it's worth saying that John Paul II was a fairly strict theologian. People were impressed by his charisma, and he certainly had a wonderful way of dealing with individuals and groups. But the fact is, he stood absolutely firm on the traditional, longstanding, thousand-year teachings of the Catholic Church. He didn't budge. And that's part of what made him so extraordinary, was the fact that up against all the winds of the different kinds of isms that were blowing around in the world, he stood firm defending Catholicism.
I thought there were some shifts. I thought that he did allow women a greater role in communion. I thought that he did spend more time looking back at church's relationship with Jews and Aboriginal people than his predecessors.
Well, as I say, his way of dealing with different issues was particularly attractive. But as a theologian, he stood his ground. When it came to the essential principles of the Catholic faith, he never wavered. So it's not as if there is a radical difference between his way of leading the church and the way that Pope Benedict XVI is likely to lead on a theological level. So saying that, I'm trying to point out that there isn't a major difference. It isn't as if this man somehow has a stricter approach. What I think has happened is because he spent so many years being principally the person who reviewed theological writings and positions of other theologians in the church, he was known as the one who called people to task. And that makes him, quote unquote, strict or disciplinarian.
Right.
But he was just doing his job. That is the job of the person who sits in that position.
This is the man who heads the Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, right?
That's exactly. Exactly. So from that point of view, he is no more or less strict as a theologian than any of the other cardinals. And it's just that we see his activity in a certain light because of the role that he played. Now that he's Holy Father, I think his role will shift. His style will not be quite the same because someone else will take the position of the Congregation of the Faith and be the one who diligently explains to people what's acceptable and what's unacceptable. He won't have that role mm-hmm. anymore. But as far as his theology, he's not changed.
Sister Marie, he joked in an interview at one point about being considered the Grand Inquisitor, and those more critical referred to him as the Rottweiler in his role of defending the doctrine of the faith in this office. What Father Barrett is saying is that now he's got a different job. Do you think that we'll see a different person from the man that has been known from this enforcer role?
I think it's quite possible. And I agree with Father Barrett in this regard. You know, when you're the one who says yes or no, you know, it's like the disciplinarian of a high school. When you become the principal of the high school, you've got to start dealing with parents and faculty and who brings the food in, the cafeteria ladies, et cetera. So I think, and I pray for him, I pray that his own ability to be attuned to the needs of the church, that he will have to, you know, to expand. You know, he hasn't had to deal with the after effects of the nose or whatever. Mm-hmm. If there's time, I would like to make one other statement, which I think is extremely important. And I'm wondering if Father Barrett will agree with this statement once I make it. One of the things that has sort of saddened me in the context of the reporting on the papacy and on who gets elected and who doesn't get elected, et cetera, or on, you know, the dissident Catholics or the cafeteria Catholics. What I really think, you said something very very important earlier. You said something about being faithful to the core teachings of the church. There are core teachings of the faith that to be a member, we really and truly must adhere to those. And otherwise, we put ourselves outside the community of the faith. What I think a lot of people do not know, and I've heard some commentators make some really strange statements, and when they refer to the cafeteria Catholics, Catholic teaching talks about a hierarchy of truths. There are some truths that are so core to the center of the faith that to not accept them would put oneself automatically outside.
Give me an example.
The Trinity, belief in the Trinity. But there are others that are not central to the core. Example, the pre-Vatican II teaching on eating meat on Friday. And yet you had Catholics before Vatican II thinking that eating meat on Friday was just as sinful as not going to Mass on Sunday. That's not true. And so I do believe that this Pope will uphold the solid, central, core teachings of the Church, just as Pope John Paul II did, as his predecessors did. And I would support that. I just wish that we would use this as a teaching moment so that Catholics, non-Catholics, and some commentators would make the difference that and stop placing abortion and birth control in the same category, because they're not. One is scripturally grounded that life is sacred. The other is, you know, a teaching that is man-made that may be revisited in the future due to scientific data, etc. But every time I hear those two issues put in the same thing, of course he's not going to change his mind on abortion. He can't. That's in scripture.
Well, we'll hear more about that from our listeners, no doubt, when we continue. But Father Barrett, we have to take a break in just a moment. Did you have anything that you wanted to add to what Sister Maureen was saying on this?
I agree with Sister Maureen about the distinction of hierarchy of truths. What I think is important, and I think Pope Benedict XVI will do it, is that we have to learn how to convey, how to communicate these truths, which we haven't done a very good job about, and the distinctions between them. That's the task that lies ahead.
All right, Connection listeners, what are the truths that matter to you? What are the distinctions that matter to you? And when you reflect on what's important in terms of what this new Pope will bring to the leadership of the Church, what are your priorities? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Our telephone number is 1-800-423-8255. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the election of Cardinal Joseph Ratzinger as Pope. He is now Pope Benedict XVI. And with me here on the program today, Father Michael Barrett, director of the Holy Cross Chapel in Houston, Texas, Sister Maureen Sullivan, who is a Dominican Sister of Hope and a professor of theology at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire. We're going to go straight to our callers, Cambridge, Massachusetts. Michael's on the line. Hi, Michael.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, what do you think?
Hi. As a Jewish person, here's my concern. Pope John Paul II made it clear on several occasions that he considered the Jewish people the elder brother of the Catholic people, that they had their own covenant with God and should be respected. I mean, he grew up surrounded by Jews during the Nazi occupation and the communist occupation of Poland, and he really understood that many Jews today fear that another violent anti-Semitic event like the Holocaust could happen any day. After all, before the last big event, the Holocaust, in this past century, many Jews really believed that such a thing couldn't happen in the 20th century. I thought that John Paul II had spoken firmly enough about these things over his papacy that they'd finally taken root and become permanent tenets held by the Church. What worries me is that John Paul II has been gone only a matter of days, and that there's already been some revisionism of his statements by the Church.
By the Church, meaning who?
I'm sorry, by Benedict XVI and some people who've been speaking about him, for example, on some of the NPR programs lately. For example, Benedict XVI has said no, that John Paul II really only meant interfaith dialogue was really only about evangelism, and that he hoped, for example, that one day the Jews would finally say yes to Christ. That seems to me the kind of relativism that I think someone like Benedict himself would find morally reprehensible, considering how firm a stand was taken by John Paul II. For many Jews, these matters aren't subtle, abstract theological interpretations and moral belief and what's the role of the Church, but really about fear for survival in the 21st century.
Father Barrett, I saw a quote of the new Pope saying that other faiths, I'm assuming he meant among those Judaism, were gravely deficient. Now, those two words in quote. Help Michael with what he's asking here and our understanding of how this appears to be a change.
I think that it just appears to be a change. I don't think there is any change. I think, first, let's just recall that he also suffered under Nazi Germany during World War II, and so it's not that he is unaware of the difficulties that the Jewish people experienced. I think you have to take that remark about deficiently inferior, or whatever the phrase was exactly now, is that in the context of everything that John Paul II taught— then he is speaking about a particular point. Because remember, underlying premises all the time here is that Benedict XVI is going to follow very carefully in the footsteps of John Paul II in his theological approach and in the initiatives that he's begun to reach out to other faiths, to reach out to young people, to reach out to the modern world.
But I think part of Michael's question here is, is Cardinal Ratzinger to be held to what he said prior to his election as Pope, or do we kind of clean the slate and start again?
No, we don't clean the slate and start again. I think you have to go back and look. He's taken one phrase out of context in a document that when you look at the whole context, you realize that he's not saying anything very much different from John Paul II. Now, you take that one phrase and it can sound pretty rough all by itself, but I think you have to go back to the context, and he's not trying to make any kind of a political comment or judgment on a particular religion. He's just pointing out that from a theological perspective, there's a difference from the point of view of the Catholic faith. But in light of that, he's not saying, therefore, we don't worry about other religions and that we consider other religions inferior. He's not saying that. If you take the phrase out of context, which I think is what a lot of people have done, is they've examined particular phrases of Cardinal Ratzinger and then used them to label him and to force him into a certain kind of a category. I think you have to step back. You have to read all his writings. You have to understand where the man is coming from and his relationship to the teachings of the previous Holy Father, which he's going to uphold and continue and develop, and say, okay, then in light of that, what does he mean by this? And what he means is something that's more of a theological commentary than some kind of a denunciation, is the way it's been presented.
All right, let's hear from Sister Marina.
You know, there are a couple of issues here, and I really was touched by the caller's question because of the history of the Jewish people. But to discuss the long history that goes into this question would be beyond the scope of our time here. One thing needs to be said, though, that at the Second Vatican Council, and I believe I made reference to this on our last program, the Second Vatican Council made very clear, and that is the last time the official church spoke as an ecumenical council, and so we are bound by those teachings. But the council said in the pastoral constitution on the church that in a manner known only to God, the gift of the Holy Spirit will not be deprived to anyone. And so Vatican II espoused the possibility of universal salvation. What happened in the year 2000 with the document Dominus Jesus, which was issued by Cardinal Ratzinger, many, many people in the field saw this as going backwards in our interfaith dialogue. We had made such headway, we thought, you know, with our brothers and sisters in Christian denominations, Jewish, Islam, etc., that to come out and say, and granted, you don't want to take two words out and separate them as to, you know, indicate the entire theme, but Cardinal Ratzinger holds on to a teaching that is valid and Vatican II taught also. The Roman Catholic Church does believe that the unique revelation of God we received in the person of Jesus the Christ. And we will always, I imagine, my guess is that we will always say that. This does not mean that we look unkindly upon any other approach to salvation or that we look upon them as inferior. And somehow I think we have to make that clear to people.
It'll be interesting to watch this because until Pope Benedict XVI has an opportunity to say what he believes right now and how he intends to guide the church, he is going to have to live with the words and the teachings and the things that he has said going back I don't know how long. 1-800-423-8255. Next to Pinehurst, North Carolina, Oscar's on the line. Hi, Oscar.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
I'm fine. Thanks for calling.
Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to make a comment as a very devout Catholic at this time. I applaud the election of Pope Benedict, and I'm looking forward to his continually leading the church. As I said before, I was am a cradle Catholic, raised in the Catholic Church, went to Catholic school all through medical school in Spain, but I left the church because I wavered with everything that society gave us. Lived, you know, a free life and everything, but now as a father of seven, a devout Catholic I've become because I realize I need foundation. I need a strong conservative church to lead me, and we need a strong leader to continue to do that and not just go wishy-washy to every whim that comes along and every society change and every little thing that we don't like. And I don't like the cafeteria Catholic approach.
You've seen both sides, though, Oscar. So what do you say to the people who are sitting and listening and wondering about a church that is saying, you know, we need to stick to those conservative principles. We really don't want to entertain changes that would allow married priests or changes in the rules about celibacy and some of the other things that are fairly basic to the structure of the church. What do you say to them?
One, pray. The church has such foundations and such teachings that go beyond our contemporary understandings, and I'm sure that Father and Sister have a greater knowledge in that, obviously a greater knowledge than I. There's so much there that teaches you to get through all these rough times that you don't need all these, you know, I don't need, you know, got to have everything. I don't need stuff. I don't need to have a huge house, a huge car, and deprive myself of meat. As I said, I'm a physician. I work by myself. I'm on call 24/7, 365. I have 7 children. My life revolves around them. I go to church every Sunday, go to confession monthly if I can, and that's the foundation that I need to live. And I tell everybody, you know, have patience. Learn, first of all, learn. Read the writings of the church, the teachings of the church, as they're meant to be.
Oscar, let me step in here if I can. I'm interested in hearing from Father Barrett on the future of the American Catholic Church and whether or not you hear in Oscar's return to the church the core of that future.
I do. I think that there is a whole group of people, younger people, and then also there are people like Oscar who have settled into life, have families and responsibilities, have achieved a certain amount of success and then look back and realize there's something missing. And they turn and they look and they find that in the faith that they always had but had abandoned, it was there. I think it's very important what he says about learning. A lot of people have abandoned the Catholic faith that they had as an image, not the real faith. They left something that they never understood in the first place. So what people have to do is go back, learn your faith well, read, ask the questions, get the answers you need to get. And I think a lot of people today are doing that. It's becoming easier to do. There's more ways to access ideas about the Catholic faith. The Catechism of the Catholic Church was published in 1993. It's an excellent resource. It's not something everybody can just pick up and read, but it's there, and other things are coming from that that are more readable and approachable for the average person. I think that's what's going to bring the church alive again great instruction.
And if it's a smaller church, more alive but smaller, that's something that I think in earlier comments, Cardinal Ratzinger said may not be such a bad thing, that if there are these people who are, you know, Catholics but really not liking a whole lot of what they see in the church, maybe it's better for them to leave and to have a church built of believers like Oscar. Would you go that far, Michael?
I would say that it's not about numbers. I don't know whether it's smaller or bigger. I would like to think we could have a big church where everybody also understands these truths. But the important thing is that the people who are in the church be striving for holiness, mm-hmm. being able to understand their faith and being able to share it with others in an intelligent way. And if that's going to mean a smaller church, then it's God's will, I suppose. But I don't think it rules out the possibility, especially in the United States, where the church is large, it's vibrant, people are very actively involved in their parishes, very interested in their faith. I think with good instruction, we could have a considerably large and very dynamic Catholic church in the United States.
Sister Marine, it is large, it is vibrant, but in places like New England, it is in trouble. There are parishes closing, mm-hmm. there are shortages of money, shortages of priests. If we go back to, you know, this notion of would the Catholic Church be better off if it was a little smaller but with a tighter core group of believers? What do you think about that?
We have a universal message, and so I think the message of the Roman Catholic and of the Christian Church in general is basically we have a message that touches all of humanity. So I'm not going to be satisfied that I want to just have a small group. I want to be able to tell everyone this story and share this story with them. And I guess what I'm getting concerned about when I hear some of the discussions, not necessarily today, is that I'm hearing that it's almost as black and white. Either you have to, you know, do it this way or not at all. And
but isn't there some of that in what Cardinal Ratzinger has said?
I think so. In fact, he was someone was quoted in the newspaper this morning as saying that Benedict XVI is going to have a German mentality of leadership. Either get on the train or get off. He will not put up with rebellious children. I find that disturbing. I find that,
yes.
And this was one man's take on it,
fair
all
enough.
Right? But that's very unfair, I think, to Ratzinger. But this is the kind of a back and forth that I'm seeing more and more. And yet I saw, you know, Richard McBrien said, who teaches at Notre Dame, he said, this is one of the most controversial newly elected popes in church history. But he says, and I believe this completely, there is a way to be an inclusive pope, to be open to the dialogue, to the questions of all segments of church and society without compromising doctrine. And I guess I go back to John the 23rd, who at the very beginning of the council said, we would rather, I forget his exact words, we prefer the medicine of mercy to the than to that of condemnation.
1-800-423-8255. Let's go to Norfolk, Virginia. Sheila's on the line. Hi, Sheila.
Hi, how are you doing today?
I'm well. Thanks for calling.
Good, good. I'm calling because I'm a Baptist, and I consider myself pretty much conservative. But I feel that if we're going to be conservative, let's be conservative in all things in accordance with the Holy Bible. And I have concern about how the pedophilia scandals were treated so lightly, and it appeared to me that cardinal law had been promoted, and every child out there who was adversely impacted was killed in some way. That child has had to grow up in torment, and to me that's almost a fate worse than death.
What did you want from the church that you weren't seeing then, Sheila?
I did not see what I felt was real firm discipline, removal of priests and anybody who knew anything about those pedophilia scandals. It was just wrong. And then when I saw the funeral of the Pope and Cardinal Law was up there, you know, doing the ceremony, It really hurt me, and I wasn't impacted, but I felt for those who were.
And with the new pope, I mean, he said at one point that the media was taking this issue and using it to attack the church, Sheila.
I disagree with that, because this particular pope was the right-hand man of John Paul, and if anybody had any influence to make it right, he could have.
Sheila, thank you for your call.
All
I'm
right.
Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Father Barrett, maybe you could speak to that. I know it's something that's going to be raised a lot in the next few days.
It will be. It's obviously, it's a sad episode in the history of the church in the United States. I'd first like to just point out that this is a problem that permeates the entire society. It's not just limited to the clergy. We do have to hold clergy to higher standards, especially the Catholic priest. Nevertheless, this is a problem that the whole society has to face. Now, having said that, I think the bishops of this country in a very rapid fashion have addressed the issue and have been pretty firm in their discipline. One strike and you're out. There's been very little room to wiggle, and they're really recognizing that things went wrong and now things have to be put right. I think it's been quick, and I think it's been firm, and maybe even at times could be characterized as severe in certain cases. Nevertheless, that's the way the bishops have conducted this,
Sister Marine,
this reform.
You're probably hearing something different from people in the Boston area.
Yeah, I am. And this is one of the areas I will talk about anything in the church and love to discuss the church. I have been so pained by this whole sexual abuse scandal that I find myself really unable to make an intelligent discussion of it, because Sheila, the caller, raised a very good point. I was asked on another program just recently, you know, it seemed that John Paul II was extremely firm against communism, extremely firm against the Iraqi war. He scolded, you know, President Bush, etc. They did not see that same kind of firmness when it came to this scandal. And to be perfectly frank with you and with Sheila and with all of our listeners, I don't understand it. I simply do not understand why we still don't feel that enough was done. I can't comprehend it.
Do you think that this is something that the new pope can address?
I hope so.
You think it's important that he do that?
I do. I do. This caused a great deal of pain, suffering, and lack of credibility, at least in the American church, and I think it's something that has to be addressed.
1-800-423-8255. Connection listeners, your thoughts on the role and the responsibilities of the new Pope Benedict XVI. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection this hour, a conversation about the roles, the responsibilities of the new Pope, your thoughts on what his election means to the American Catholic Church and what you're looking for. We're at 1-800-423-8255. Father Michael Barrett is with us. He's a director of the director of the Holy Cross Chapel in Houston, Texas, and a priest with Opus Dei. That's a conservative international institution of the Catholic Church based in New York. Sister Maureen Sullivan is here with me. She's a Dominican Sister of Hope, professor of theology at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire. And we're going to Windsor, Virginia. Laurel is on the line from there. Hi, Laurel.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what you're thinking.
Well, before I get to my comment, I just have to say very quickly, I agree with everything Sheila said wholeheartedly and everything that Sister Maureen said regarding the pedophilia scandal. And
it's not over is what you're saying.
Oh, no. It'll never be over for those children.
Yeah.
And I grew up in Houston, by the way. I am appalled that your guest used the word severe in connection with this scandal. There is no such thing as being too severe with a pedophile or anyone who hides it. That is just, I am speechless.
I'm going to get to your point, but I'm going to give Father Barrett a chance to answer that just before we do that.
Thank you. By severe, what I meant, certainly I don't condone under any circumstances anything having to do with pedophilia. I guess when I say severe, I mean that a lot of other issues were included in the one of pedophilia, which was totally unacceptable. And so that even people who were not, strictly speaking, pedophiles or people who had even a slight mistake in their background suffered a great deal. And I think sometimes in that regard, there may have been a severity that was at times, it was sad to see too, because, you know, justice goes both ways. But as far as pedophilia, there's no way you can justify any acceptance under any circumstances. That's clear as a bell.
Laura, let's go on with your point. What did you want to say?
Well, I'm a Protestant, and based on the media's characterizations of the new Pope, I was initially disappointed. Based on the fact that he might be so conservative that he would not even consider the possibility of birth control, especially in relation to AIDS prevention, but in light of what Sister Maureen said a few minutes ago, perhaps that's not fair, and perhaps we should wait a little bit and see. I had no understanding of the idea of a hierarchy of truths,
mm-hmm.
and that actually relieves me a little bit, that maybe down the road it could happen. But I think with the infrastructure of missionary work, that the church is in a unique position to save so many lives if they would just permit the distribution of contraceptives or prophylactics to prevent AIDS.
Laurel, I'm going to ask you to just stay on the line while we bring another caller in. This is John. He's joining us from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, John.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine. I'm going to take from my little note on the computer screen here that you're probably going to disagree with Laurel here. Am I right?
And I just want to regress a little bit because she has, and I guess it's okay on this program that if we do, and I want my Protestant brothers and sisters to know, my separated brothers and sisters to know, and I have many of them who are friends. I'm living right in the middle of the Bible Belt, and many of them agree with me that, and many of them know, they just don't talk about it, and they don't hear it on public radio either, that the problem in with pedophilia and homosexuality is worse in Protestant denominations and in the public school system. Now, having said that, I want to talk and pretty much direct my comments to Father Barrett, because when I first came, I heard this. I don't listen to the radio. I've been listening to it because of the election of our great new Pope. I heard that a priest from Opus Dei was going to be on, and then I heard that the Dominican Sister was going to be on. Now, I'm near the Dominican Sisters here in Nashville, and they're
working. John, I need you to get to your point. You're doing a lot of talking here. What is it that you wanted to say?
I just wonder why. Well, I'm, give me a second, please. I haven't been on that long. There's a dictatorship of relativism. That's what the Pope said. And I want to know why Father Barrett is sitting there as an Opus Dei priest and not talking to the sister about intrinsic evil. Just ask her, what is intrinsic evil? That's what contraception is. The Church has always taught it, and it's in the Catechism. Now, God bless the doctor who just called a little while ago and has seven children. Why are we contracepting ourselves? And Father, why are you sitting there and not talking to Sister about this?
Because the topic has not arisen. It's not something that we were discussing. We were discussing other issues. As far as the teaching of the Church on contraception, it's been stated very clearly not only by the encyclical of Pope Paul VI in 1968, but it's also been spoken to by all of the bishops throughout the world and the Synod of Bishops that artificial contraception goes against the dignity of the human person. It undermines the nature of the sexual relations between a man and a woman that are beautiful and sacred, and there's no doubt about that. In a sense, there's nothing to debate. Those things have already been established quite clearly as to what the Church's stand is and always will be on artificial contraception.
So in reference to what Laurel was saying earlier, let me just take it a step further.
Yes.
If there was an African bishop who made the case that the use of the condom was something that would help prevent the spread of AIDS, is there room within the Church for that kind of conversation?
In theological circles, there probably would be a conversation about it. Although, let's face it, evidence is that condoms do not prevent the spread of AIDS, in fact. But apart from that, even if it could be proven, it's very unlikely that the Church is going to compromise on something that's very important to the very dignity, the heart of the dignity of the human person, in a situation that, yes, it saves lives, but on the other hand, it also undermines the lives of many others at the same time by supporting something that goes against the dignity of the human person.
I want to come back to Sister Maureen on that, because in if we refer back to what Laurel was saying about the hierarchy of truths, it's not clear to those of us who aren't as immersed in Catholic business and Catholic church doctrine as you are. Does that mean that these two things, as John said, you can't talk about the Catholic Church and contraception in the same sense? Is there room for that conversation in your view?
Yes, there is room for that conversation for this reason. There are three levels of church teaching in the Catholic Church. One is dogma, which is directly out of Scripture, and that we would also consider that infallible teachings,
right,
like the Trinity, the resurrection. The next level would be doctrine, and that is man-made teaching. And I say man-made because we only have males who are in the magisterium right now, the official teaching body of the Church. It's called the official teaching of the Church. It's called doctrine. The birth control teaching falls under the category of doctrine.
Okay.
The third level would be discipline. And discipline would have been an example would have been the no eating meat on Fridays before Vatican II. And the basic, the discipline here does not mean as in punishment. It means as in fasting and mortification, aiding one in the development of a spiritual life. Getting back to the issue of doctrine, there are other doctrines. And this is very important for the listeners to know. There are other church doctrines that we have reversed in the history of Christianity. For example, our teaching on slavery. The Catholic Church the Christian Church espoused slavery. Our teaching on capital punishment. Our teaching on the use of torture for the good of the common good. Our teaching on no one outside the Catholic Church can be saved. That was a doctrine that was taught to me growing up. It was part of the pre-Vatican II catechism. We changed that. So doctrines can be changed. I'm not saying they will be. I'm not saying they should be. But the fact that we can have a conversation about it, if you want to say that, you refer to dogma. We're not going to converse whether Jesus is really the Son of God. End of story. But to bring up discussions about doctrinal issues is part and parcel of the theological endeavor in the Catholic Church.
Father Barrett, did you want to jump in on that before I go back to callers?
Well, I think that the clarification is very good that Sister Maureen made. At the same time, doctrine is not something that's necessarily changed. And the examples that she cites in some cases is the doctrine has been clarified, that it may have been misunderstood, but the essential doctrine has not changed. And in some areas, the doctrine touches so closely upon dogma that the unlikelihood of it changing is very, very, very strong. So there's even degrees within doctrine of what's closer to the dogma and what's farther away from the dogma. The church has taught pretty clearly throughout, not just in this generation, but in previous generations, that the use of artificial contraception touches so deeply on the human person in se, in himself or herself, mm-hmm. that it's a doctrine that is not going to change.
1-800-423-8255 to Columbia, South Carolina for our next call. Linda is with us. Hi, Linda.
Hi, good morning. I'm 50 years old, born and raised Catholic. I have four young daughters that, I take to the Catholic Church and try to raise them Catholic. And yet when I have a lot of questions these days, and when I watched the Pope's funeral, and I'm watching everything and all the people that participated, I don't see a woman. I don't see a woman involved in anything that has anything to do with any decision-making, and yet I'm striving to teach my daughters to be strong women, strive to attain a lot, and yet where does that fit in with the church? You have a world that's 50 or more percent women, but there was not one. It's all men, older men, and men directing everything. Where does the modern woman fit in with the Catholic Church?
Linda, I'd love to respond to that because you touch on something that is near and dear to my heart. And I think it's going to be one of the issues that the 21st century church is going to have to address. I don't really know for sure where our newly elected pope stands on that. I don't know what he might plan to do for that. But I will tell you that you have raised an issue that many women and many men feel very concerned about. And I have heard more than one person acknowledge or, describe the Pope's magnificent, beautiful, spiritual funeral and not to see any women whatsoever. It's a cause for concern. And yet I will tell you this, that I do believe that in time, this is a matter that will take time. 40 years ago at the Second Vatican Council, at the very first session, there were only men. There were 2,500 or so bishops that came together to examine the needs of the church. And at the second session, Cardinal Sunens got up and he said, how will we, talk about what's good for the church when half of them aren't even represented here? And it wasn't until the third session that they had women auditors that were present there. They were just auditors. They could not vote, etc. So women have come a long way, and we do need to go a long way. Please encourage your daughters to learn, to study, and to be faithful.
I'm Dick Gordon. You're listening to The Connection. Father Barrett, what do you say to Linda?
I say that two things. One, go back and read the document that the Holy Father wrote on the dignity and vocation of women, and also a letter he wrote some years later to women. And I think you'll see that his vision for women was very dynamic and very clear, and he had spoken clearly that women should be more involved in the government of the church and the leading of the church. It is going to take time, as Sister Maureen says, but I think things are going in a direction that it will become more clear that women will be involved. In fact, studies show that at the parish level and the diocesan level, something like 80% of the people who are helping run the church in the United States of America are women. So they do participate in that level of making decisions and introducing initiatives and guiding things in a certain direction. The other thing I'd like to say is the image of the church is often confused with the hierarchy and the priesthood. That is not the church. The church principally is the layperson who is in the middle of the world bringing Christ into that environment and bringing that environment to God. That is the heart of the church. So when you look out at a funeral and you see that there's a lot of men on the altar because they're priests and bishops, and you think that that's the church, I think that's the mistake that you can easily make. The church is far greater than the hierarchy and the priesthood, far greater. And so in this setting, yes, you're going to have a predominance of men, but the church herself is more than just the bishops and the priests.
Let me go to a call in Boston. Jay's joining us on the line. Hi, Jay.
Hi. I've been listening to the program. I just wanted, there are so many things I could comment on. I think that
pick one for me. We're near the end of the show. Hey,
I think the new Pope looks at North America and baptized Catholics in North America and believe that most of these dissident Catholics have already left the church. They just don't know it yet. I hope he's going to do is clarify Catholic teaching, and I believe he has the intellectual wherewithal to do that and to communicate it so that people will know whether they are with the church or against it. They embrace the Catholic faith. I mean,
do you think he has to be more clear? Do you think that he needs to set a series of rules or standards and say, look, meet this or don't bother with us?
No. Explaining the reasons why the secular world, for example, is wrong on artificial contraception, why Europe itself is dying. It's not going to be around in 70 years because they're not reproducing themselves. Why the AIDS epidemic is spreading because of the contraceptive mentality that has separated procreation from sex and the breakdown of the family and all of the other issues. It's the secular world that will have to change its beliefs about sex, not the Catholic Church. We don't expect the secular world to do that, but the consequence is that the secular Western world will continue to disintegrate.
Jay, I'm going to stop you there because I want to make time for both my guests on this, but we'll need to be brief. Father Barrett, do you want to start just on what Jay's saying?
I think Jay makes a good point, pointing out that the society is suffering from its behavior, and the church is trying to rescue people from that by showing the true way to go. I think the other thing is that the church's teaching is not meant to separate people and to have either you're in or you're out. Mm-hmm. I think we want all people to come to the knowledge of the truth and be saved. That's scriptural. And so we are trying to bring people as a family closer and closer. It's not a question of in or out. It shouldn't be put that way.
Okay. It is clearly moral guidance that we're talking about here, but how do you make it that inclusive, not exclusive?
And I think that's going to be the challenge. I really do think, and I think one way of being inclusive is being open to dialogue. I think our new pope, I'm hoping and I'm praying that when groups want to pursue a discussion of the homosexual state or of birth control or of women in the church, that it will not simply be answered with a, that is not going to occur. So I think we have to be open to dialogue, because then if people are heard and listened to, then I think that that's inclusive. You know,
and if it doesn't happen at the Vatican level, and I need to be really quick with this because mm-hmm. I know we were talking about it before, do you think that this new pope will allow that conversation to happen regionally in North America with the bishops here?
I honestly do not know. I have nothing to go on.
Is that an important measure, though?
I think because
the church goes from
because
here.
That goes back to the collegial model that we
right.
spoke about earlier, that the local bishop will have to have a way of being the representative to his people and his teacher.
Sister Maureen, thanks again for
My
coming
pleasure.
In. Sister Maureen Sullivan is a Dominican Sister of Hope and Professor of Theology at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire. Father Michael Barrett, thank you for your help as well.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to have been here.
Father Barrett is Director of the Holy Cross Chapel in Houston and a priest with Opus Dei. Our program is produced by Jennifer Ehrlich, Catherine Fenollosa, Jen Matson, Virginia Prescott, Christina Russo, and Doug Sugarts. Help from Sarah Baker, Annie Hopengarten, and Patrick Kiker. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Dick Gordon. This is The Connection.